Hi, welcome back to the channel. If you're a regular viewer of my videos, you'll know that I post interesting stories about the world of business, finance and investment. But business can be quite boring, so I try to make those videos as fun as possible. And in each one, I like to include an interesting and fun story at the end that'll put a smile on your face. And this video is a compilation of some of the funniest videos that I've posted recently. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. If you do, please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Finally today, I wanted to talk about rodents. Now, most people don't like rodents, and mice and rats are very unpopular, particularly if you have them in your house. But in the rodent world, there is a new public enemy number one, the hamster. Now, you may be thinking that hamsters are cute and friendly and really nice, but that's not true. That is not the case. In fact, there is an army of people in hazmat suits in Hong Kong who've been sent out to track down these dangerous predators. Now, this story actually relates to the Little Boss Pet Shop. And the Little Boss Pet Shop sells hamsters, chinchillas and rabbits. And it's been a happy, friendly place for kids and families to visit for the last few years. But recently, Little Boss Pet Shop has become the most famous pet shop in the whole world. And the reason for that is that 11 hamsters in the shop have tested positive for COVID. Now, that might sound quite concerning to you, but my biggest concern here is who's testing hamsters for COVID? We've got enough problems testing people for COVID. It's quite expensive putting these tests together. It takes quite a long time. You have to do some quite invasive things with the rod before you can finish your test. So whose idea was it to start testing hamsters? But whoever's idea it was, it's paid off because they've managed to find 11 hamsters who've now got COVID. And because they've got a zero tolerance policy for COVID in China, they have now decided to track down all of the hamsters. So the hazmat suited guys stormed the Little Boss Pet Shop and removed all of the hamsters. And they also removed all of the chinchillas and the rabbits. However, none of the chinchillas or the rabbits tested positive. And the authorities have now issued a statement advising any hamster owners not to kiss their pets and to hand over the hamsters as soon as possible. And they've been specifically told not to release their hamsters in the streets. So this throws up the question as to what is going to happen to all of these hamsters. Will all of the families simply hand over these hamsters without kissing them goodbye? Or will there be an underground movement? Will people secretly be storing hamsters? Will there be special hidden rooms in people's houses where they have their hamster runs? And people can come round and have a look at the hamsters and play with the hamsters and obviously not kiss the hamsters because that would be crazy. And the crazy thing about all of this is that there is absolutely no evidence of COVID being transmitted from animals to humans. In fact, it's most likely that the COVID got transmitted from people to the hamsters. So it's a bit of a shame for the hamsters that they've tested positive. I still don't know who is testing hamsters for COVID. What other animals they're also testing, I don't know. Obviously, they've tested chinchillas and rabbits now, but they must have a lot of staff in Hong Kong if they're now instructing people to go around testing all of these animals for COVID on a regular basis. Anyway, I thought I'd mention it today. If you've got a hamster, then make sure you're keeping it safe. If you really want to be safe, then maybe you should test your hamster, although I'm not sure how you'll get the cotton bud up the hamster's nose. That's going to be quite tricky unless you've got a very, very small cotton bud. But I'll obviously keep you posted on any further breaking news about hamsters testing positive for COVID or chinchillas or rabbits or any other form of pets. And finally today, I wanted to share the story of possibly the most incompetent attempt at financial fraud I have ever heard of in my life. Now, this story comes from Ireland and relates to a 66-year-old man called Peter Doyle. Now, Peter Doyle is a pensioner who collects his pension every week from the local post office. Now, Mr. Doyle was reportedly not feeling very well recently, so he sent his nephew to the post office to collect his pension for him. But the post office official said that he wasn't allowed to give it to him and that he would have to come in person. So Mr. Doyle's nephew and his friend decided to help him go collect his pension from the post office. However, it appears that Mr. Doyle had died sometime before that. So Mr. Doyle's nephew and his friend were seen carrying his body with a jumper wrapped around his face and a hat on his head. And they dragged this body all the way into the post office. Now, unfortunately, when they got there, there was a large queue. So they dragged him all the way past the queue and his feet were dragging along the ground. And then they asked the cashier to give him his pension. Now, the cashier saw that he was obviously dead and refused to make the payment. An ambulance subsequently arrived and took the body away. And it's been reported that potentially he may have been dead for up to 2 days. When interviewed about this matter, the two gentlemen who helped Mr. Doyle into the post office said that they believed that he'd had a heart attack on the way to the post office and that he just went a bit slumpy once he got in there. So quite an unusual story. And if you've ever seen the film Weekend at Bernie's and thought that that could never happen, well, you were wrong because it has actually happened in Ireland in the last week. And finally today, I wanted to share the story of a Florida man who found himself in a situation that I'm sure we've all been in, but his solution wasn't really the sort of thing that I would have chosen to done and didn't really work out very well for him. So one of the big impacts of the pandemic for all of us is the fact that we have to wear face masks when we go into shops, travel on trains and buses and planes. And I'm sure we've all been there. You arrive at the doors and you suddenly realise that you've forgotten your mask. You haven't got it in your pocket. What are you going to do? So often you see people pulling their t-shirts up over their face and mouth, or if they've got a scarf, they pull that round their face, or just holding their hand to their face. But a guy called Adam Jen decided to take a different approach. So he boarded a United Airlines plane with a small red ladies' G-string on his face. So after the initial amusement, the staff approached Mr. Jen and asked him to remove his G-string, which is not something that you hear said to people on aeroplanes very often. He refused to remove his G-string, which is not a phrase that I use very often, I have to say. And after a small argument, Mr. Jen was asked to leave the plane. Now, as I said, we've all been there. We've all found ourselves in that difficult situation when you haven't got the face mask to hand. But when I put my hand in my pocket, I don't pull out a lady's G-string and think, oh, that's fine. That will do just the job. Perfect. So I'm not quite sure where Mr. Jen got his G-string from, whether it was in his pocket or on his person, or whether he asked one of the other passengers to lend him one, whether it was clean or used. I've no idea the answer to any of these questions. But when interviewed after the event, Mr. Jen said that he was an activist and he compared himself to Rosa Parks. Now, Rosa Parks is an iconic figure in US history. She was one of the people who contributed to the changes in racial inequality in the USA. Mr. Jen is fighting for his right to wear ladies' underwear on his face on planes. Now, I'm not sure whether those two people are really comparable. I don't think we'll look back in 10 or 15 or 100 years' time and be talking about how Adam Jen changed the world for all of us. I don't think I'll be seeing people sitting next to me on a plane wearing a G-string or tighty whiteys or any of that sort of thing. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't want to be seeing those sort of people sitting next to me, to be honest. So hopefully the movement won't pick up any pace. Hopefully we won't see Adam Jen on the TV talking about the breakthroughs that he's made and how we can all wear our boxer shorts on our heads every time that we travel around the world. And finally today, I wanted to talk about pay. Now, this is an issue that affects all of us. We all want to be paid more. We all like to grumble about the fact that we're not being paid enough and we're doing a great job and it's not fair that I only got a small pay rise. And if you're in a job where you get paid a bonus, you'll be hoping every year that you're going to get a really good bonus. You're going to get that really big payout that you've always dreamed about. And if your boss asks you, how much do you think you should be paid? It's a very difficult question to answer. Some people are quite conservative. Some people are a bit shy. Some people don't really like to ask for more money. So it's always a bit of a quandary as to what do you say if somebody says to you, how much do you think you should be paid? But that isn't the problem for Marcelo Claude. This guy is a rock star banker. He's a legend and he's not afraid to put his money where his mouth is. Now, you've probably never heard of Marcelo Claude, but this guy is a Bolivian national who's been living a rock star lifestyle in the world of finance. So at his 40th birthday, he had Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony perform. And he likes to be seen rubbing shoulders at sporting events with the likes of David Beckham. And if you're looking for a new mantra or philosophy in life, then look no further than Marcelo Claude, who recently tweeted, "Never settle for less than what you are worth. That's the day you stop believing in yourself." Now, Mr. Claude was hired by SoftBank to sort out some of their problems. And most recently, he's been involved with WeWork. And WeWork is a massive investment that SoftBank made that was due to float in New York, but the IPO got pulled. and they're now looking at a major loss situation. Now, Marcelo Claude likes to negotiate a good deal for himself. So his salary is currently sitting at $3 million per year. And in 2020, he got paid a performance-related bonus of $14 million. So his total take-home in 2020 was $17 million. But that was nowhere near good enough for Marcelo Claude. He was disgusted with that sort of return. And it's reported that he negotiated a golden parachute of $180 million for his WeWork transaction. So a golden parachute is basically a payoff that you're guaranteed if you ever leave the company. So he knows that if he gets forced out of SoftBank, he's got a guaranteed $180 million waiting for him. So as I said, Marcelo Claude wasn't very happy with his $14 million bonus. So this year he upped the ante and demanded that he needed to be paid $2 billion. Now, not surprisingly, the SoftBank board decided not to give him a $2 billion bonus, and he has now left the company. But as I mentioned, he's got that $180 million golden parachute waiting for him. So my view here is that Marcelo Claude probably just wanted to up the ante to get his $180 million and go and find another job, paying him even more money. And he probably sat at home and thought, what's the most outrageous figure that I'm prepared to put onto the table to see what these guys do about it? So $2 billion seems like a pretty outrageous figure to me. That would have made him one of the highest paid people in the world. Not quite in Elon Musk's bracket, but getting there. Anyway, hats off to Marcelo Claude. He just increased his bonus from $14 million last year to $180 million this year. So good luck to him. And finally today, I wanted to share a story about North Korea's internet. Now, this isn't usually a topic that I would cover, but it caught my eye and put a smile on my face, and I thought you might like to hear the story. So North Korea is a very secretive society. Nobody really knows a lot about what goes on. And there's a lot of suspicion and fear around the rest of the world. And there's always stories about supposed nuclear missile tests and North Korea about to start sending missiles into South Korea and various other conspiracy stories that pop up from time to time. Now, North Korea has been reporting major problems with its internet. And a lot of the government websites have been going down and having major problems. And North Korea has been accusing a lot of the Western world of targeting it, of doing cyber attacks in response to some missile testing. So the North Koreans have undertaken a spate of missile tests recently, and their belief is that these cyber attacks are in direct response to their missile testing program. However, it turns out that it's not the FBI or the CIA or any of the world's major intelligence agencies who are trying to break North Korea's internet. But it turns out that the culprit is actually an American guy sitting at home in his pajamas and slippers, eating spicy snacks whilst bringing down North Korea's internet on a regular basis. And the guy in question is an unnamed hacker who uses the handle P4X. Now, he claims that the North Koreans tried to hack into his personal network to pick up some of his hacking technology. And this really upset P4X, so he decided to go on a personal vendetta to bring down the country's internet. He's quoted as saying, "It felt like the right thing to do here. If they don't see we have teeth, it's just going to keep coming. I want them to understand that if you come at us, it means that some of your infrastructure is going down for a while." He added that he reported the incident to American authorities, such as the FBI, but was ignored. "If no one's going to help me, I'm going to help myself," he said. So pretty impressive stuff from P4X. And this isn't quite as bad as you might imagine, because in North Korea, nobody's really allowed to use the internet. The public aren't using it. So it's really government websites and really boring applications. So he's probably doing everybody a favour in the long run because nobody's using the internet anyway. But I thought you might like the story. I quite like the imagery of a guy sitting at home, wondering what's happening to his computer, doing a trace, finding that it's the North Korean authorities who are trying to hack into his PC, and then suddenly going on a one-man vendetta to bring down a whole nation in his slippers and his pyjamas. Quite amusing. Anyway, hopefully that's put a smile on your face. It did for me. And finally today, I wanted to give you another update on our friendly Swiss banking giant, Credit Suisse. So everybody expects the world of Swiss banking to be quite dull and boring. Nothing really happens of any excitement in Swiss banks. But you'd be wrong if you thought that, because what goes on at Credit Suisse is better than any movie that you've seen recently.
So we've recently covered off a variety of things from Credit Suisse, including their $1.3 billion tuna bond fiasco in Mozambique, where they were reportedly lending to help develop the tuna fishing fleets, but actually the money was being siphoned off to buy warships and guns and to line everybody's pockets. We had two massive hedge fund failures that resulted in billions being lost for all of the investors at Credit Suisse. Then we had the spying scandal, where the bank had hired private investigators to actually follow some of their employees to see what they were up to and to record their conversations outside of work. And then finally, I told you the story of the new chief executive who'd been brought in to clean everything up and to sort out the reputation and to put Credit Suisse back firmly on the map. And unfortunately, after 9 months, he ended up resigning because he breached all of the COVID rules around the world. He decided to fly in to watch the Wimbledon tennis finals and some of the Euro 2020 football finals and breached all of the rules and therefore had to fall on his sword. So we thought that all of the excitement is over, but Credit Suisse is now back in the news because it's now being sued for helping a Bulgarian cocaine trafficking gang to launder millions of euros, including some of it stuffed into actual suitcases. So that would be a good enough story in itself. But the ringleader of this Bulgarian cocaine trafficking gang is actually an ex-professional Bulgarian wrestler. So the story goes that a female employee of Credit Suisse who joined the bank in 2004 was dating the professional wrestler. And his associate started taking large suitcases full of cash into the bank and placing them in a safe deposit box. The Bulgarian gang then used a process called smurfing, and it's got nothing to do with those cute little creatures from the movies. Smurfing is a process whereby you take a large amount of cash and break it down into smaller amounts that go below the radar. So Credit Suisse would have had a limit which would have triggered an investigation. So I don't know what the limit was, but let's assume it was 5,000 euros. So if you were to place a deposit above 5,000 euros in cash, then that would have triggered an investigation and would have caused the bank to then find out that the Bulgarians were placing dirty money into their accounts. So if you know what that limit is, and obviously if you're dating one of the employees, you can find out that information, then you can go in and put the amount that's just below that. So if the limit was 5,000 euros, then you could deposit 4,999 euros and that would go undetected. And therefore, what you can do is do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those deposits. So you need a lot of people turning up, opening the suitcase full of cash, taking out 4,999 euros worth, and then giving it into the bank to put into an account. So it's alleged that the female employee helped the gang to launder over 146 million francs, which is more than 150 million US dollars. And included in that figure was 43 million francs or $45 million in cash. Now that is an enormous amount of transactions. You can imagine if you've got somebody having to put in 4,999 francs every time, the amount of transactions to get to a 43 million franc limit is huge. So needless to say, there must have been a lot of people involved in this scam. You would have had queues out the door every single day of all these Bulgarian guys with 4,999 francs looking to place their deposit. Surely somebody must have thought there's something a bit unusual going on here. But it went on for a long period of time. She joined the bank in 2004 and she was arrested in 2009. So this was over a 5-year period. The Credit Suisse is denying that the money came from illegal sources and they claim that the ex-professional wrestler had legitimate business concerns in construction, hotels and leasing. But the whole thing seems to have been a complete shambles because even when Credit Suisse became aware that there were issues with regards to these transactions, they reported it to the prosecutors. And in June 2007, the prosecutors asked Credit Suisse for information on accounts held by Banev and Associates in response to requests from Bulgaria. Noticing a series of withdrawals, the bank's compliance department asked the prosecutors whether to freeze the accounts, but was told not to in order to avoid tipping the clients off. By the time the prosecutors gave Credit Suisse the go-ahead, much of the money had been withdrawn. So not really a very bright move. They said, let's leave it. Let's not tell them. We don't want to tip them off. We don't want to avoid giving them any suspicion that we're on their case. But at the same time, they allowed them to withdraw all the money and then arrested them after all of the cash was gone. Absolutely crazy. So it'll be very interesting to see how this case ends up. And it's interesting that Credit Suisse's defence is that they think that Banev was actually a professional involved in construction and hotels. Because in 2017, he was convicted of drug trafficking in Italy and then convicted of money laundering in Bulgaria in 2018. He then went on the run and disappeared and was later arrested in the Ukraine in September 2021. In addition to that, his business associate, who actually introduced all of this business to the new Credit Suisse employee, was shot dead in Sofia in Bulgaria in 2005 as he left a restaurant with his wife. So I'm not sure that Credit Suisse's defence that Banev was a good guy and was really just focused on construction and hotels is going to hold any water in the courts. So I'll keep you posted if there's any further news on this story. Hopefully you've enjoyed this video today. You found it informative, relevant and a little bit of fun. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.